In Master's book, in Yogananda's book, The Essence of Self-Realization, The Wisdom of Paramahansa Yogananda, it's a book of collected sayings of Master that Swami Kriyananda, who was his direct disciple, wrote down during the years that Kriyananda lived with him. So the book has been out for 25 years, but when it was first offered, it was all new thoughts that had never been seen before. I've been running a webinar on that book, and even though I've read that book many times in the last 25 years, it still has this extraordinary power. And there's two parts of it that I wanted to bring forward today. In one part of it, Swami Kriyananda has recorded a conversation between an intellectual man who came to see Yogananda and asked certain questions in Yogananda's answers. And this man, being more of a philosopher than a devotee being one who is devoted to the relationship with God, a philosopher who's interested in the ideas of religion. So this philosopher is asking Master questions about exact definitions. What do you mean by God? What are his attributes? You know, what are the qualities? What are this? The kind of things that theologians and philosophers like to talk about. And Master responds in a way that's extremely interesting. And he is explaining that it's going to be impossible for any of us with our human minds to be able to perceive or comprehend infinity, omnipresence, unconditional love, eternity. By its very definition, this mind, which is thinking in terms of this body, this life, these relationships, my physical condition, my emotional needs, all of those things, to even just make the leap, even to the idea of infinity, it's very, very difficult to do. Life after death, reincarnation, Christ consciousness, Jesus being born in a manger. We can hear all of these ideas, but we can only obviously understand them to a certain point. Something else has to take over before we really know. Now, the nature of an avatar, when Jesus came to live in this earth, and that's what we're celebrating now particularly, is that particular glorious incarnation. He doesn't come. Yogananda did not come. Buddha did not come to give us really clear intellectual definitions of exactly what the attributes of spirit really are. What they come to do is to awaken us to this extraordinary possibility of divine communion, of compassion beyond our wildest imaginings, of unconditional love, not only for God, but for one another, of this confidence of our eternal salvation in the spirit. And so Master says the point of an avatar coming like this is not to explain it so the mind is very satisfied and it can be argued, but they want to inspire us to move to a whole other level of reality. And so much of what they say is not really even designed to be philosophically exactly like this. It's meant to touch into some part of ourselves that makes us realize what is possible. And elsewhere, Master says, and so therefore, they always talk about God, the Masters talk about God, in terms of what we already know. And we have these very deep longings in our heart. Above all, what we have is this deep longing for love, this longing to be understood, to be seen, to be comforted, to be appreciated, to be supported. And so the Masters talk about what we do know. They talk about Father, Heavenly Father. They talk about Divine Mother. They talk about friendship. They talk about romantic love. And it's romantic love often especially that the Masters will move into and try to talk to us about. In this particular reading, we're all waiting for the bridegroom. And the bridegroom comes, but only some of those who love him are taken into the room, and the others come and the door is closed against them. I mean, all of us can understand what this is about. Whether we understand the business of the lamps and the virgins and all of that, it might not be so clear to our minds, but we all understand waiting for that love and then having that love come and we missed it. You know, everyone's heart understands that right away, doesn't it? And instead of trying to take this as a story in which we try to get the definitions exactly right, what we have to feel is that longing and that disappointment. And then the masters keep trying to tell us, seek ye first the kingdom of God, Jesus said, and all this shall be added unto you. I mean, he just phrases that, all this. What is this? The this he's talking about is not the mansion on the hill and the car and the driveway and the children and the family necessarily. It's all this that the heart is ever restless for. We live in this constant state of restlessness when we really think about it. It's the most, that word restless is such an amazing word. During the Christmas season, my responsibility is for, of all things, the costumes for the Christmas Eve program. I have this obsessive relationship to costumes. It's the only word I can use to describe it. Once the idea of a costume gets in my head, it will not give me any peace. And I have been contemplating that word, restless. You know, I wake up early in the morning and I can't sleep and I can barely meditate because my mind is so restless. It wants to go and put the gold lame back in the sewing machine and start where I've broken two sewing machines this week. You know, just obsessively, restlessly moving that. Unfortunately, it's a joyful project and it's fun and all of those things and it's for a good cause. But restless is the word. And we're restless all the time. You know, it's not quite what we want. I was talking to a friend and, you know, just people in their romantic relationships, there's this word people use, should I settle for this or should I try for something more? And we have this list in our mind of what it's supposed to be and if this one doesn't quite fulfill it and even though there's lots of good things here, I'm not going to settle for this, I'm going to go over here and try this. Restless, 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 restless. Wherever I'm standing, it's never enough. And God is trying to communicate with us. He's always trying to communicate with us. Wherever you're standing, you're right. It will never be enough. And you can shift and shift and shift and change and go here and go there and try to find this one and try to find that one. We can upgrade a little, you know. My car was 17 years old when I turned it in and I upgraded. It's nice. You know, I like this one that I have now. I bought it because it was real similar to the old one, and so it didn't require any mental effort on my part, but it's just a little nicer, right? That's what we're always thinking, isn't it? A little nicer. So Master talks to us, but then he talks to us, and he says 1,000, in another place, 1,000 million romantic loves all pushed together. You know, the most delicious taste, the most delightful feelings, the most exquisite sights. And it all sounds like so far over the top because he's not defining. He's trying to inspire. And now we are the beginning of December, and this is the time when the baby Jesus is born. And, you know, Christmas time is, in Western countries, is really a moment when something really breaks through. And it breaks through on a very profound level. Master and Swami Kriyananda were always very, very emphatic about the importance of entering into the spiritual reality of Christmas. And they were very, they admonished people, do not dissipate the energy of this particular by just getting lost in the material side of things. The veil between the worlds gets really thin at this particular time. You know, the physical world and the astral world and the spiritual world, it's all happening here all at the same time. And as far as I can understand, Christmas is celebrated everywhere. And it's not merely that we sort of are buying into this Macy's-generated kind of feeling. It's like there really is a celebration on all levels. And if we become in tune with that, and this is also what this story is about with the virgins being closed out. It was the bridegroom is always there. And this is the fascinating part. Jesus puts it, you never know the hour of the moment when he'll come. And that seems rather random, like a bad guest, you know, who doesn't answer your RSVP and you don't know how many places to set at the table because maybe he'll come, maybe he won't come. That's not what he means. What he means is that potential is always there. And we never really know exactly when our vibration will suddenly be lifted into a time that matches. So what happens for the foolish virgins is the power of God is present, but they're vibrating on a different level. Instead of remembering that this restless feeling in my heart will only be satisfied in attunement with the divine, we're rushing here and we're doing that, and we may even be doing good works, but we're not doing it out of selfless love for God. Doing it because we're restless and this is what we do. But what the Bible is urging upon us is this attunement, this keeping this lamp filled with the power and the presence of the love we have in our hearts. Elsewhere in this book, there's a paragraph, and I've read this book for 25 years. So when I suddenly read a paragraph that I'm sure wasn't there before, I'm sure it wasn't there before. Even though the cover of my book is the 1990 version, I'm sure it wasn't there before. But Master talks about the purpose of all love that we experience is to introduce us to the potential of divine love. And so he has this one paragraph in the book, and he says, the love of our parents is to help us understand that love is supportive and protective. The love of our friends is to help us understand that love is freely given without conditions or expectations, without any compelling reason. Friendship, Master says, is the freest form of love because it's formless. And therefore, love between friends is given merely because I want to, not because you're my wife and you have to, or you're my child and you will die if I don't, but just because we want to. Love between lovers, romantic love, Master uses the phrase, the selfless intensity of romantic love. Isn't that a beautiful phrase? Selfless intensity. And that's what people desire, that intensity, but the intensity that takes you out of yourself. And then he said, and this is the Christmas story, the love of parents for their children is for people to understand that love is delicate and precious and must be nurtured and protected. And one of the reasons that Christmas is such a heart-expanding time is because it's about the baby. And we sort of take this for granted, but we don't subtly tune in, because suddenly everything you see becomes very precious and everything needs to be nurtured. And we translate that into, oh, the whole family's coming home. One of my friends who had a life-threatening illness, he had several, but this was when he had one crisis, his two adult children had come home that day. And that evening he ends up in the hospital nearly dead. But he said his two adult children had come home, they'd spend a great day together, and he quoted the American Indians, it was a good day to die. As it happened, he didn't, but he came within a hair's breadth. He just found himself in the hospital, and he thought, well, it's a good day to die. And so we transfer at Christmas time that precious to be nurtured to family. We want everybody to come home. We want to put our arms around our families. But God is just giving us a drop of the ocean. And what That kind of love brings out of us, and Swamiji writes about it also in this way. He said, the birth of the baby Jesus is symbolic of the birth of the possibility of infinite consciousness within us, of Christ consciousness, of divine love, of the possibility. There's a video that was put out by a church. I'm going to stop completely and say this. There's a video put out by a church. I love this video. And it talks about what happens to the people in the congregation when their cell phones go off at different points in the congregation. And the different points in the service. You know, if it happens during the beginning, you know, then you're only penalized in this sort of way. But if it happens during the sermon, you are vaporized and you go to hell forever. And there's a video of it. There's a video of all these people in church and their cell phone goes off and then they're just vaporized and they're gone. I don't have the power to implement that. But for weeks and weeks, every time a cell phone goes off in here, I think about it. So there you are, dear friends. I don't know what can be done about it. Swami Kriyananda would rail against it because India was infinitely worse, infinitely. Everybody has a mobile device constantly. And he was giving a talk in front of several thousand people, and a phone began to ring. And he stopped, and he just stood, and the phone rang, and the phone rang, and he stood, and he stood. His own pocket. He reached in, you know, there it was. The man who called him, who shall remain nameless, never lived it down. So, I don't have one, so it's not mine. But going back to, I will go back to the baby Jesus if I can find him. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Swamiji talks about the birth of the baby Jesus, which is a true story in itself. You know, that the baby Jesus happens on many different levels. One is, quite simply, it really did happen. You know, the divine incarnated in a perfect divine being incarnated in a human body to live among us as a man among men and to show us what perfection looks like in human form. This is what an avatar does. This is the role of an avatar of whom Jesus is the most beloved in the West for very good reason. And he was born in a baby's body. But even from birth, he was a fully divine being. I was reading a book about Anandamoyi Ma, who was a very advanced saint in India. And among the characteristics of her is that when she was born, she didn't cry. She had no agitation at all. She just was born and lay there very calmly. And when someone asked her about it, she said, because she remembered, oh, she said, I was just lying there admiring the beautiful green trees that I could see out the window. Because she described that her consciousness was seamless from before her birth to being a baby, to being a child, to being a grown woman. The way she answered the question was, I was always the same. Because she was not identified with this changing reality that we live, the mind that makes us impossible to understand infinity, she lived in that infinity. And when that infinity assumed the form of a baby, she just lived as a baby, but her consciousness never changed. So she saw no reason to be excited about being born. So there she was being born, just admiring the green trees. Everyone around her is welcoming the baby, but she is just the same. So the story of Jesus is a true story. He was, in fact, the Christ. And he brought with him that full consciousness, and he was recognized by angels and wise men and by his mother and all of that. It's really so. It's also because everything in this world is symbolic, just as I was describing all those different kinds of love. It's also the birth, the constant potential for the birth of Christ consciousness within us. And this is where what we learn from a parent's love for its children becomes very important, because that Christ consciousness within us is very precious and must be protected and be nurtured. Now think how parents nurture a newborn child. You know, everything about that child is so vulnerable, and everything about a mother and a father's love is that I will do anything to protect this child. I will do anything to make sure that this child's potential is realized. And all of the things that happen in a human way are just the tiniest fraction of what is really happening in our heart. So we understand that potential for loving that much and for sacrificing all self-interest in order to cultivate that love. Many years ago at Ananda, when I was very first there, there were two women in my life, and one of them I loved dearly, and one of them I did not get along with at all. We just had this karmic conflict that, thank God, we resolved. But it was very intense during this time. And I was very new on the spiritual path, and I just couldn't figure things out once. And I knew that I had an intense aversion over here and an intense affection on this side. And so I came up with this bright idea, which I presented to Swami Kriyananda. Swamiji, the problem is not that I dislike this woman so much. The problem is that I love this one too much. And so if I loved her less, it would sort of equalize it. What do you think? Swami looked at me. He's been sarcastic with me 3 times, and this was the first. Not sarcastic, really sarcastic. That's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. That's what he said. Just like that. Oh, really? Why? You know? But what he said is that great love is given to us so we can begin to understand the joy of great love. So the what's planted in us when a baby is born is so that we can understand the joy of great love. And we think, oh, it's because the baby is born, because we don't understand that that is our own potential. How are we able to love that child? Where does the selfless intensity of romantic love come? Do we think it comes because that child is there? Because that perfect hero or heroine, our dream romantic partner, is there? Do we think it actually is in them? Or is it coming out of us? You know, the babies, we project so much on those poor little babies. But you know, they're there. And they do love us back, and the full consciousness, the full friend is there. But the love comes out of us, doesn't it? It shows us of what we are made. We didn't realize what we were able to do, did we? We didn't realize how much we could love. And then we experienced the joy of great love. All of human life is God's play, trying to bring us to something greater. It's not an end in itself. Now, that doesn't mean that we should do it badly. Just the opposite. The more perfectly we live in this world, the more perfectly then we are beginning to understand what kind of perfection is possible. Be ye therefore perfect, as our Father in heaven is perfect. That wasn't hyperbole. That's really destiny. That's what he's describing. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto you. That was a promise. Oh, if this love is so satisfying to me, and then the masters come and say, 1,000,000,000 romantic loves all in one, moment by moment, mind just doesn't even know what to think. You think about that great thrilling moment of first romance, 1,000,000,000 times every moment. It's not a definition. It's a promise. And it's a promise that our hearts will always be restless until they are fulfilled. Our hearts are restless until they find their rest in thee. That's how St. Augustine put it. And so it is. And so it will always be. But now, during this beautiful season of the year, we can all love the baby. We're given permission, really, to love the baby. And take that opportunity, and you will find your life transformed. God bless you.